All right. So right now I'm joined with Dan Connell, who is a expert on Eritrea. So thank you very much for joining me here, Dan.
Glad to be here, Scott.
So now you recently gave a talk at the University of Winnipeg here, kind of going over the history of Eritrea and some of the problems. Now, one part that I kind of want to emphasize here in this interview is sort of, I guess, the strategic interests in Eritrea and how that would influence this resounding silence over what is going on in the country. So I guess to start off, just talk a bit about the regime itself, the brutal nature of it, but then also coupled with how silent the international community has been over this issue.
Sure. Well, I think one of the great ironies is that I first became involved in writing about Eritrea back in the 1970s when Ethiopia laid claim to it and, in fact, laid siege to the capital and much of the country during their occupation of it. The whole war zone was off limits to journalists, and there was a deafening silence in the larger world about it. And I hitchhiked into the middle of that, getting onto a supply convoy, and wrote a story that ended up on the front page of the Washington Post about the massacres that were taking place inside. And here we are today with something similar, with a situation of importance to the larger world for a variety of reasons that is largely uncovered, in part because of the success of the government there, now Eritrea as an independent state, preventing people from getting in to cover it. Few journalists are there, even to visit. There's only one, actually, in the country writing for Voice of America, and it's an Eritrean under very tight scrutiny by the regime. And movement within the country is highly restricted. So, you know, they've succeeded in part in putting a kind of blanket over it. Why Eritrea is important is in part its location along the southeastern end of the Red Sea, making it strategic in terms of its location along the Red Sea, a key trade route for much of the world, and also as the southern flank of the Middle East. It's a bridge between the Middle East and Africa in many respects, and that makes it both important and dangerous as well. The current government came to power in the 1990s after a 30-year war for independence against an Ethiopia backed first by the U.S. and later, after the regime in Ethiopia changed, by the Soviet Union. And for the first 6-7 years of its existence, it really seemed to broadcast enormous promise for a fresh start in Africa by a country internally divided, half Christian, half Muslim, but somehow all pulling together to make the country work. After it went back to war with Ethiopia over seemingly minor border issues at the end of the 90s, the government there balked at any criticism of its policy, refused to implement a constitution that had been ratified already, and repeatedly postponed national elections. And 10 years ago, in 2001, when criticism became too loud for them, they simply arrested all their critics and shut down the press. So there's been a lid on the country ever since, the last 10 years. There's absolutely no independent journalism inside Eritrea. There are no independent non-governmental organizations. There are no advocacy groups. Human rights groups have not been allowed in to assess the situation. Any kind of aid organization that even raises a voice about what's going on gets kicked out. So they have really managed the situation inside. Now, at the same time, as you mentioned, this otherwise impoverished country is sitting on an enormous gold load, and as well other minerals that have recently been discovered, not very deep in the ground, easily accessible, and there's been a rush of international mining companies with Canadian companies in the lead to get at that gold. And so the government has done its very best there to kind of keep attention away from itself in the hope that they can start getting that those resources out of the ground, getting the revenue flowing in, and strengthen their ability to build up their armed forces and continue to manage the society as they have, as a one-party rule police state.
Now, kind of talking more about this, the sitting on gold. When was this discovered, this gold in Eritrea?
Well, several years ago it was discovered. The mining company started coming in 2 to 3 years ago, and one of the first in there was a company really set up in part for this purpose, Nevsun Resources, which is Canada-based. Since that time, close to 30 companies have come in to request permission to explore or to actually get started with production. Nevsun at this point is the only one that's actually producing for export. They've just gotten started this year. So what we're seeing is really the front edge of the results. But there's a large gold shield, as they call it, that sits in part in Eritrea, stretches across the Red Sea to the Arabian Peninsula. And as I said, it's not very deep. It's not very difficult to get to. The complicating factors for Eritrea are, one, it has a very weak infrastructure, so that there is difficulty of getting these materials out of the country. It's also an unstable political situation, relying on force and coercion to manage the population. So there's always the risk of political upheaval. And of course, I think if the larger world were aware of the extent of human rights violations in Eritrea, the companies that are involved in this process and those that stand to reap profits from it might be given pause. At the very least, their reputations would be tarnished.
With this mining interest, and you kind of said, like, you know, if the international community knew about it, I mean, is it simply that simple to say that they don't know about it? I mean, considering that the United States has, it has a base not too far from Eritrea in Djibouti.
Well, when we're talking about, the public is not aware very much of the situation there.
Hmm.
Key human rights groups have been putting out reports year after year. Human Rights Watch did an extraordinary report in April 2009 on what they call the national service in Eritrea, by which they conscript young people at 17 or 18 and then keep them in government service for indefinite periods, 8, 10 years or more, at subsistence wages. There's an Oslo Peace Center that put out another very comprehensive and detailed report. A United Nations monitoring group taking a look at Eritrea's behavior in the region, and particularly its support for Islamist extremists in Somalia, last summer put out an extremely detailed report about the human rights situation, the political repression, the two-tiered economy that takes place in Eritrea. The information is out there. So people at governmental levels are aware of this. There is, however, very little understanding of this in the general public, so there's no pressure on anyone to act. And I think that in the case, certainly, of the United States, the issue here is complicated by the fact that the U.S. is already involved in several other conflicts in the region, Somalia being one of them, of course, by Ethiopia. But across the Red Sea, not least Iraq, also Yemen. And I think there is a wish now to avoid being drawn into another conflict in Eritrea that could explode in a way that would be unpredictable and dangerous in the chaos that could follow. So in the end, I think it comes down to the old cliche that the devil you know is better than the one you don't. They're content to look the other way as long as there's no pressure on them not to.
Right. Now, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, the devil you know in this case perhaps rings true, but in light of what happened in Libya, I mean, Gaddafi was the devil that people knew too, right? So, I mean, it certainly seems selective is what I'm getting at.
No, I agree. You can't but notice that we are not saying the same things about Syria that we did about Libya, let alone Bahrain, where there has been repression against the democracy forces there. In Eritrea, there's a kind of ritualistic acknowledgement of the arrest of former leaders of the government, ministers of foreign affairs, defense, and others, the army chief of staff back in 2001. And the fact that all the press was shut down and editors and reporters were all arrested. Every year, right around September 18th and 19th when this happened, there are public statements saying we decry this and we call for their release. And then they go on with business as usual. In the case of the U.S., there's another factor here that I didn't mention, and that is that we have a close alliance with Ethiopia as the anchor state of policy in the Horn of Africa. And Ethiopia has been the main staging area for dealing with the Islamist threat coming out of Somalia as well. And so I think there it's simply a calculation that it's better to keep Eritrea on the back burner and focus on other issues while they can. So it really comes down to simply making a formalistic protest and then allowing it to continue.
Looking forward, I mean, if there really was a more of a grassroots sort of pressure put on, do you think that would actually get something done where perhaps something might be done about Eritrea?
Well, you know, the Eritrean government has continually thumbed its nose at the international community when it's been criticized. And unless criticism has teeth, they'll continue to do so. So public statements by the government are barely worth the paper they're printed on. Mm-hmm. There is vulnerability, though. There are two key areas that the regime is open to pressure. One is that it's been sustaining itself with money collected from its diaspora, from Eritreans who have fled as refugees or emigrated abroad, and who want access to the homeland, to see family, friends, land, home villages. The government requires all Eritreans living abroad to pay an annual 2% tax. And they are lately trying to argue that it's not really a tax, it's just a donation. But the reality is they require people to pay this tax if they want to renew their passports from Eritrea, or if they hold Canadian passports, say, if they want a visa. The Eritrean government doesn't recognize dual nationality. So if you are ethnically Eritrean, no matter what passport you're carrying, and you want to come to Eritrea, you have to prove that you paid that tax. They collect it through their embassy in various countries and through their consulates and in some cases through party supporters in more remote areas if there's not a consulate. And that money is key toward keeping the regime going. If the Canadian government and the U.S. and other governments paid a little bit more attention to the taxes being collected within their borders and what they're being used for, and put restrictions on the transfer of those monies, for example, not allowing this to go through the diplomatic pouch system. This would make it more difficult. Second is the question of mining. The Eritrean government really looks at this gold and other minerals as a lifeline, as their future. Once they get significant revenues flowing into that country and have paid off the capital investments they've made, they will have the capacity to arm themselves to the teeth, much like Sudan did once its oil was flowing, and then they're going to become far more dangerous than they are today. So doing something to restrict the companies that are in there, doing something to track the products of that mining, just as we did with blood diamonds, would be another very important lever to get change in Eritrea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to leave it there, Dan, but thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you also, Scott, for your interest in this.
Yes. Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's so underreported, and sadly, a lot of people probably don't even know that Eritrea as a country even exists. But
I put you and your radio station at the cutting edge.
thank you. Now, if the listeners want more information on Eritrea, where should they go?
Well, there are a variety of Eritrean websites that publish critical information on the situation. If you type in Asmarino, Asmarino, you will find it. Awate, Awate, or Asena, Assenna, in each case, .com. I also have a website, dancanal.net. So,
excellent. Yeah, well,
it's out there.
Yes, exactly. It is out there. This information is out there. So thank you again, Dan.
Thank you.
Yes, have a good day. Bye.